Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's Tuesday, September the 22nd. A very good morning to you and welcome to Africa Link. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, in Burkina Faso, army troops have entered the capital, Ouagadougou, without resistance. They are negotiating the surrender of the coup leaders.
Everybody wants to do all to avert further bloodshed. That is the wish of everybody in Burkina Faso, including the regular army.
In Nigeria, at least 45 people have been killed in the northeastern city of Maiduguri in attacks carried out by suspected members of the militant Islamist group Boko Haram.
The injured persons were taken to three referral hospital, Maiduguri Teaching Hospital, and then Specialist Hospital, Maiduguri, and Umarishehu Hospital.
Also on our programme, the second anniversary of the Westgate Mall attack in Kenya and cheesemaking in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Stay tuned.
Top story.
The news agency AFP is reporting that Burkina Faso army troops have entered the capital Ouagadougou without resistance and have begun negotiating the surrender of the coup leaders. On Monday, army chiefs ordered the coup leaders to lay down their arms as army units marched from the provinces to the capital. Earlier this morning, I called political commentator James Amadeka in the capital, and he told me there was no word yet on any possible progress at those talks, nor was it known how many troops were in the capital. But what was the mood like? Were local residents expecting the crisis to be resolved peacefully, or were they fearing for the worst?
Yesterday, when news arrived at the coup makers have agreed to lay down their arms. There were lots of jubilation all around town. So it's like everybody wants to do all to avert further bloodshed. That is the wish of everybody in Burkina Faso, including the regular army.
There's going to be an ECOWAS summit on this crisis in the Nigerian capital Abuja today. What's likely to emerge from this?
The coup makers are asking for amnesty for themselves and the coup leaders of the coup. They are asking for the inclusion of the former candidates of the former Blessed Compaoré Party, the CDP, and the other conditions that they are asking for before they step down. Yeah, it will be a very difficult option. It will be a very difficult decision for Burkina Faso. One thing too we have to note is that right from the submission of the report of the National Truth and Reconciliation Committee of Burkina Faso, it is spelled out clearly that in their proposal that the fate of General Gilbert Djingere must be determined, not now, but when a newly elected government has been put in place. And I think that it remains the same. So whatever it is, its fate will not be determined now. Even if ECOWAS had a proposal, anything to go by, Burkina Faso are saying that we should leave that man alone and just force them to return power to the elected transitional.
Political commentator in Ouagadougou, James Amadeka. There were steps towards ending the crisis on Monday when ECOWAS mediators suggested an amnesty for coup leaders who are loyal to the ousted president Blaise Compaoré. Compaoré's supporters would also be allowed to stand in the upcoming elections, something that was previously denied to them. The aim of this plan is to restore democratic governance to Burkina Faso, but under what conditions? I put that question to Peter Kwakwa, president of the West African Journalists Association, who was in Burkina Faso when the coup took place.
The coup leader has in fact insisted that they want to remain in power and take the country to elections. And from all indication, the coup leaders have had their own insecurity about what the transitional leaders intended doing when they excluded them from the election process. And there were indications that they might be prosecuted. But yes, the mediation effort, I believe, will set the pace for that kind of tension to reduce, as the mediation is asking for amnesty and the election to be extended to all the other, you know, party members or political leaders that were excluded from the elections that were scheduled for October. This effort coming from the ECOWAS leadership, I would think the sticky point is whether the leaders will be allowed to stay in power to take the country to elections.
What sort of compromise do you think would be acceptable to both sides?
I think reasonably the talk about allowing those excluded from the election to participate, I think is a good proposal, in my opinion, because when you have a shaky transition like this one happening in Burkina, it will be counterproductive to be thinking about excluding a section of the political arrangement.
How important is it for regional mediators to diffuse this crisis quickly? Are they racing against time?
In my opinion, the ECOWAS authority moving quickly. The coup happened on Wednesday. Thursday was officially announced, and West African leaders moving on Saturday. I think that was rapid for me. And the fact that the coup leaders were willing to listen to the ECOWAS authorities, I think they set the pace for the parties to meet and discuss. So we will have to see how ECOWAS will handle that. But as far as they've come, I think their efforts have been good so far, and we can only hope for the better for the people of Burkina Faso.
What is the mood, the atmosphere like in Burkina Faso at the moment? I understand you've just left the country. Did it have the feel of a country under military rule?
It looks like that already. In the moment they announced the coup, there were military people in the streets shooting and in the air. I mean, the streets were deserted. It looks very much like a ghost town at some point. There are reports that close to 10 persons have already been killed and dozens, more than 100 others injured.
But you're reasonably hopeful then that a change for the better is in the offing?
That is what I think. If the people in Burkina accept, you know, the mediation effort, because they seem to be very adamant. Protesters have said they want the coup leaders to go. They don't want them there. Of course, they are supporters of the former president who was driven out of power. So to have them continuing the transition to elections will mean they will be exercising some influence, some kind of influence over the elections. But what is also good to note is that the coup makers are also under pressure. There have been condemnation from the UN, the AU. In fact, the AU has suspended Burkina. I am almost certain that if the situation is not resolved and the coup leaders remain adamant, I will not, you know, be surprised if the ECOWAS authorities suspended them.
Peter Kwakwa, president of the West African Journalists Association, and I was talking to him before we heard that the Burkina Faso army had entered the capital.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
In northeastern Nigeria, details are emerging of multiple bomb attacks in Borno State carried out by suspected members of Boko Haram. Residents say the attacks, which happened within 20 minutes of one another, came as a surprise because the Nigerian army had been claiming it had removed almost all the bases belonging to the Islamist group. According to our correspondent in Gombe, Mohammed Al-Amin, the authorities have confirmed that 45 people were killed and over 90 people critically injured in the blasts.
The blasts happened shortly after 7:30 p.m. on Sunday in the Gumari and Ajilari areas of Maiduguri, according to the Northeast Zonal Relief Agency coordinator, Muhammad Kanar.
We experienced 45 dead and we get 96 seriously injured. The injured persons were taken to three referral hospital, Maiduguri Teaching Hospital, and then Specialist Hospital Maiduguri and Umar Shehu Hospital, which is just near the place where the incident occurred.
Nigerian military spokesman Colonel Sani Kuka Sheka Usman has confirmed the attack. A resident, Modu Kelemi, told me via telephone line that they fear this attack will force the army to impose a curfew in the upcoming Eid celebration.
We had been hoping that we will have a very smooth and happy Salah celebration this time, with the residents of the town allowed to go around with their vehicles. Unfortunately, this happened, and this has been our greatest worry, because each time there is a celebration, the residents are always locked indoors. We are not allowed to move with vehicles, and the celebration as a result mad.
Ibrahim Aliyu, a political analyst, said Maiduguri residents should take a share amount of the blame for the attacks.
People became so relaxed. Just because the military says there is a success in fighting, people became relaxed. And these boys now capitalized on this attitude of people to keep attacking people. So I want to tell people that it is too early to start thinking that all the security measures we put in our place should be removed, because these boys are still there. They live with us. They know us. They see us. So we should intensify our security in our places instead of relaxation.
Nigerian military has claimed success in overrunning rebel positions in recent weeks and claimed the militants are in disarray. Boko Haram leader Abubakar Shekau, however, dismissed the claims in an audio recording released on social media on Saturday as lies.
Mohammed Al-Amin in Gombe, and you're listening to Deutsche Welle's Africa Link.
Africa on the move.
Africa on the Move this week takes us to the mountains of the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, where we pay a visit to the local cheese producers. They are keeping alive a time-honoured tradition, defying war and displacement. Happiness Mutanji presents this report by Jan-Philipp Scholz.
On these beautiful green mountains surrounding Goma, in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, animals thrive in a pastoral of abundance. Despite a raging conflict few kilometers from here, the sound of these grazing cows communicates a message of serenity. Their owner is Niyitegeka Canisius, who runs a small family dairy. Canisius has been raising cows and producing Gouda cheese in a small wooden shack for over 20 years. His main tools are two bathtubs and a so-called cheese hub.
This is the most important part. I need to keep moving this through the thickening medium so that we can skim off the whey. That way, the cheese achieves the right consistency.
Canisius lives in the mountains of North Kivu, about 50 kilometers from Goma. It is an area which has seen literal calm over the years, with countless armed groups active in the region. These UN peacemakers' armored personal carrier, along with more than 4,000 UN troops, have been trying to maintain some semblance of security in the area. So far, the conflict has speared Canisius' wooden shack. This allowed him and his family to continue making cheese. On a good day, they produce a couple of dozen wheels of cheese.
When I was a boy, I dreamed about making cheese. Working with cheese is something special for me. Cheese is delicious and healthy, and my cheese is the reason my family and I have enough money.
Belgian monks first brought the skill of making cheese to Congo. The local people developed a taste for this milk product, but only a few learned the art of making it. Canisius learned the trade from an old farmer who lived nearby. Today, people come all the way to his farm to have a taste of his cheese.
I do not know how he makes it, but I just love his cheese.
Over the years, Canisius has found buyers for his cheese in Goma. where a kilo of cheese sells for between 2 and 3 euros.
I am proud of what I have been able to build with my cheese, and I hope that I can pass on my skills to at least one of my children, who will then take over the business.
Making cheese in hills of eastern Congo is hard. To transport his wares to Goma, Canisius has to balance about 30 kilos of cheese on his head across a 5-kilometer field.
And that report was written by Jan-Philipp Schultz. To Kenya now, where local residents in the capital Nairobi held prayers and lit candles on Monday to mark the second anniversary of the Westgate Mall attack. On the 21st of September 2013, four gunmen killed 67 people in the shopping precinct. The Somali militant group Al-Shabaab claimed responsibility for the attack, saying it was in retaliation for the presence of Kenyan troops in Somalia. Al-Shabaab launched a string of subsequent attacks in Kenya, including the massacre of 148 people at Garissa University College. The Westgate Mall was reopened in July after extensive renovation work. James Shimanyula was there on the anniversary, and Abubakar Jallo asked him what the mood was like.
The mood is of sadness, happiness, remembrance, and many people, especially ordinary people, have been going about their duties in the surrounding areas close to Westgate since it was reopened a few months ago.
You said the mood there is about sadness, happiness. Sadness, of course, is quite understandable. What's the cause for happiness at this moment?
They are happy because at least business has resumed, because there is an extensive security surrounding the premises which was attacked. People are also happy because at least the fear they had nursed before it was opened has actually evaporated.
Was there a sense of feeling at the ceremony? Did you notice that people have learned from the experience of this attack 2 years ago?
Unlike in the past 2 years when we have had some anniversaries, because of the changes that have taken place inside and outside the mall itself.
In Nakumat supermarket, where many of those who died, staff held special prayers for those lost. Was it business as usual after those prayers?
After the prayers, it was back to business as usual. The prayers were meant to enable people that gathered at Westgate to reflect on what happened and to look forward on the life after what happened.
A worker at Westgate has been quoted as saying, "They killed 67 people, but they did not kill our spirit." How has the mall changed since that attack?
The spirit that that person is talking about is the oneness, the togetherness, the rallying call of let's continue with the life. Life must continue. Put aside any fear that you may have been having before you came here. It's as if, honestly, Abubakar, as if nothing had happened because of the unity of the people, especially business people.
You're saying that the place is quite secure now. Can you maybe talk about how much security upgrade has been done at the mall?
Speaking of upgrading, now we have place for parking, which is more conspicuous, very clear. Security patrols or people patrolling can view it from a distance, and cars enter there. They are checked, monitored. We have a wall coming up very shortly. I think it's what I can describe as a mini great wall that will prevent any entry by people with ulterior motives. Business people have hired their own security personnel, and it's so smooth that there is no interruption, no harassment, no nothing.
That was James Shimanyula in Nairobi talking to Abubakar Jallo.
Making a difference.
And in making a difference, we head to Ghana, where the country's healthcare system is facing multiple challenges. One difficulty is that private hospitals are not accepting payment for treatment under the National Health Insurance Scheme. As Isaac Kelechi reports from Accra, better management practices could be the answer.
In Ghana's hospitals, patients wait to be attended to by health workers. But many of them who are subscribers to National Health Insurance Scheme have challenges.
They force us to do the National Health Insurance and all of the surgery, the private hospital will not accept it again.
We are told to go and have it done, and we have done the right thing. Instead of they must accept it and treat us nicely with it. Some hospitals, if you go, they tell you, because the government is not paying, so they can't even take care of you.
But for government, it can't trust the claims being made and records of patients that have not been automated. The solution primarily is to adopt a technology that eliminates fraud and speeds up the process of paying claims on time, as well as streamline the records of patients. That's where the Ghanaian software company ClaimSync comes in.
Four of us started ClaimSync, and we did so because we identified there was a need for many of the healthcare facilities in Ghana to use an intuitive healthcare management information system that will enable them to easily record patient details, track the visits, and also generate electronic claims that can be submitted.
That's the CEO of ClaimSync, Seth Akumeni. His company is offering hospitals and insurers a platform for digitalizing and processing medical records and claims. And Akumeni says it has been very successful.
And we identified that, you know, there was really a backlog of paper claims that the hospitals had to deal with. On the other hand, insurance companies were faced with a long turnaround time for processing claims because a lot of them were largely paper-based.
The issues Akumeni speaks about are those that the technology he and his colleagues, all in their early 30s, developed to address. Their biggest client is the country's National Health Insurance Authority. The CEO of the authority, Nathaniel Otu, speaks about the importance of rolling out the ongoing biometric management of the scheme.
We need to have efficiencies. So we have done a number of things to try to bring about efficiencies in the system. A clinical audit is going back to a healthcare facility, examining the folders to make sure that the bills that have been submitted are correct, and also to ensure that the quality of services that were provided were good.
The health sector is a significant sector in Ghana that requires improvement, and ClaimSync is surely playing a major role in that process.
Isaac Kelechi in Accra.
Listen to Africa Link whenever you want. Sign up for our podcast at dw.com/Africa Link Podcast.
And before we leave you, however you may be listening to us, a reminder of our main stories. In Burkina Faso, army troops have entered the capital Ouagadougou without resistance. They are negotiating the surrender of the coup leaders. In Nigeria, suspected members of the militant Islamist group Boko Haram have carried out attacks in the northeastern city of Maiduguri, killing at least 45 people. And in Nairobi, Kenyans have been holding and lighting candles to mark the second anniversary of the Westgate shopping mall attack. And there we come to the end of this edition of Africa Link. If you've any comments on the programme, do send a text message to country code 49 160 957 595 10 or an email to feedback.africa@dw.com or a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. That address once again, Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. Until the next time, thank you for listening. This is Mark Caldwell in Bonn.